Welcome to Hot Topics in Kidney Health, brought to you by the National Kidney Foundation. Each episode, we highlight the latest in kidney research, bring you up-to-date news in kidney care, dispel myths, and answer your kidney health questions. Make sure to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts to help more people with kidney disease discover us. We really appreciate it. Now, on with the show.
Hello, my name is Marlena Chesner. I use they, them pronouns. I am the Digital Content Development Manager here at NKF. And today we're talking about the Kidney Donor Index Profile. This is a really important topic that I think more waitlisted people need to hear about. Today I'm joined by Anne and Nicole. Would you both like to introduce yourself? Let's start with Anne.
Hi, everybody. My name is Anne Hubble. I am a transplant nephrologist who practices transplant nephrology here at the Cleveland Clinic Transplant Institute.
Hi, I am Nicole Jefferson. I live in Dallas, Texas, and I am a two-time transplant recipient.
Wonderful. Thank you both for being here today. I'm really excited. So let's get started with Anne. I know the wait list for a kidney transplant is long. Can you explain a little bit about how the transplant wait list actually works?
Sure. Thanks, Marlena. Currently, there's just over 88,000 individuals awaiting a kidney transplant here in the U.S. For reference, in 2022, 20,400 kidney transplants were performed. So as you can see, there's many more patients waiting transplants than we actually perform each year. So it's common for patients who are on dialysis or have advanced kidney disease and need a kidney transplant to wait between 3 and 5 years on the waiting list before getting transplanted. For patients to get on the waiting list, they undergo a multi-step evaluation process that starts with referral to a kidney transplant center. They meet with a multidisciplinary group of providers and undergo testing with both laboratory testing and some procedures. And then a transplant selection committee determines a patient's candidacy. After that, they're typically put onto the waiting list and undergo treatment with their local nephrologist who provides dialysis to them. As patients are on the waiting list, they are encouraged to stay as healthy as possible so that when a kidney transplant opportunity becomes available, they're ready to go and have the surgery.
Yeah, that's a great explanation. Thank you so much. And I know in some states, the wait time is even higher, unfortunately. So can you share what happens when a kidney from a deceased donor becomes available?
Sure. So when a donor family consents for their loved one to be an organ donor, many different things take place. There are 56 organ procurement organizations throughout the nation. In our lingo, we call organ procurement organizations OPOs. These organizations are responsible for allocating and recovering kidney transplants and are governed by federal law. The OPOs work closely with both the donor hospital in their region as well as the transplant centers in their region. They work to facilitate the organ recovery, collecting information about each of the donors, about the donor's medical journeys, about each of the donor's social characteristics, and they put this information into a national electronic database called UNET, and therefore the transplant centers can access this information about potential kidneys that are coming up for donation. The OPO representatives work around the clock, essentially day and night, to put the information in, and then transplant centers can connect with this electronic set of information to make decisions about kidney transplants.
And are patients always made aware of every kidney that becomes available?
So patients are not always made aware of the offers that are given to the transplant centers where they may be listed. The kidney transplant offers themselves are made between the local OPO representatives and the transplant center personnel. So when an offer is made to the transplant center, the actual center has the ability to either accept or decline the organ offer on the candidate's behalf. And each transplant center accepts and declines offers a little bit differently based on their own center level selection practices. In fact, on average, an organ may be offered approximately 7 times before it's accepted for transplantation. There's been a lot of effort into making the offer process more efficient so that organs can be placed in a timely manner. And we, as a transplant community, limit the number of organs that are discarded and do not end up being used for transplant. So each transplant center has a certain time frame to respond to organ offers before the offer is made available to another center. At each of the centers, they may have a different level of comfort for transplanting organs with certain characteristics. So therefore, the aggressiveness of accepting certain organ offers may vary between transplant centers. KDPI, which we're talking about today, as well as other factors are considered at the time of organ offers. These other factors may be considered include the circumstances of the donor's death, donor anatomy. Sometimes there's potential biopsy data that gives insight into the microscopic appearance of the kidney, how the kidney's performing on a pump that is sometimes used to transport it. All may be factors that a transplant surgeon and a transplant center considers at the time of an offer.
So can you explain why the Kidney Donor Profile Index was created? And is a high KDPI score the same as, let's say, a high-risk kidney?
Great. Those are all really good questions. For many years, we used to categorize donor kidneys as standard criteria donor or expanded criteria donor. But as a transplant community, we realized that there could be a better way to quantify the longevity of a kidney after it's used for transplant. So the Kidney Donor Profile Index, or KDPI, is actually a calculated number based on the donor characteristics at the time of transplantation. As I mentioned before, the organ procurement organizations collect donor information, and we use characteristics to calculate this score. The KDPI score can range between 0 and 100, and the donor characteristics that go into calculating the score are the donor age, the donor height and weight, the donor race and ethnicity, whether or not the donor had a history of high blood pressure or diabetes, the donor cause of death, their kidney function at the time of donation, and hepatitis C status. So each donor characteristic can drive the score up. So the higher the KDPI, the less time that the kidney may function after it's being used for transplantation. So roughly speaking, it's expected that a KDPI kidney between 0 and 20 may last around 11 years. A donor kidney with a KDPI from 21 to 84 may last around 9 years. And a KDPI kidney greater than 85 may last between 5 and 6 years.
Are you an online learner looking for information about kidney transplants and living donation? The National Kidney Foundation's Kidney Learning Center offers interactive education designed for kidney patients, families, care partners, and those who are living donors or who are interested in becoming a living donor. Find our free self-paced online programs at kidney.org/KLC. That's kidney.org/KLC.
Nicole, I am wondering if you could actually take us back and kind of give us a little brief overview of your kidney story and what happened when you got to the transplantation stage. Did your team discuss high KDPI kidneys with you?
Sure. So my kidney failure started in 2003. And in 2003, I started dialysis and I was looking for a kidney. And they did briefly explain it. I don't think to the extent of the second go-round with the second transplant. The first one I received in 2008. And when I received that, they did tell me, we have a high KDPI kidney for you, some diabetes issues, some high blood pressure. And I can't remember everything that was associated with that. And so, you know, like Ann said, they did tell me it'll last about 4 to 6 years. But I actually got about 12 years out of it. So that turned out really great. The second go round, because I was able to find that my kidney was failing before dialysis, my nephrologist did tell me I don't have to take a high KDPI. I can just wait for the perfect kidney. And I understood that and I agree with it. However, that was in 2016. By the time 2020 came around, I still didn't have a kidney. So when they gave me a call and offered me a high KDPI kidney, I jumped on it. Mainly, I jumped on it to beat dialysis. That was my goal because I didn't want to do dialysis ever again. And additionally, I just remembered from the first one where I had the issue, it lasted a lot longer than they anticipated. So I just jumped on the second one as well.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think that's a good point is that this is, you know, an estimate. I'm also curious, what was your understanding of a high versus low KDPI then? And maybe has it changed now?
The understanding that I had is that the higher the number, the more factors that it had, the lower number, of course, less factors that could possibly lead to a decline in that kidney earlier than holding out and waiting on a lower. But that was how I understood it, and that's how I still understand it.
Have you had good luck with the second transplant?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I love this second transplant. I have not felt the way that I feel since 2002, which was a year before my kidney failure started, when I didn't know I was in kidney failure. So this second one with the high KDPI and all of that has been amazing for me.
Oh, that's so wonderful to hear. Now, Anne, I'm wondering, how accurate is the KDPI in predicting possible transplant survival compared to a lower KDPI donation or even a living donor?
For living donors, I would start off by saying that we don't calculate a KDPI. This is strictly a calculation that's reported and done for deceased donors. And the basis of KDPI is all done as part of statistical modeling early on. So by this, when I mean this calculation was derived, a group of transplant professionals put many donor characteristics into an equation and then determined how strongly each of those characteristics would predict the longevity of a kidney. And then they knew the outcomes, the actual outcomes of those kidney transplants for these donors that they used the characteristics for. Using this modeling, we now apply this equation to kidney donors on a day-to-day basis. And it's a scientific way to estimate this likelihood or probability that the outcome or how long it will take for the kidney to stop working will actually happen in real life. So as I think I mentioned before, I would caution that the KDPI is only one piece of the puzzle and not meant to be used in isolation of other factors that are important for kidney transplant survival, especially when we think about after the transplant happens, things that the recipient can do for themselves, like adherence to their immunosuppression medications, helping to control their blood pressure and their diabetes in the long term, because all of these things can play into the longevity of the kidney transplant outside of the KDPI.
And does the potential recipient have the right to ask, you know, about those factors into a high KDPI? You know, why is it this score, and kind of go more into depth from there?
Yes, absolutely. As Nicole mentioned, you know, when her transplant center was making offers to her, they mentioned some of the characteristics like diabetes that the donor had. So absolutely, a potential recipient can be informed about the factors contributing to KDPI. Certainly, as a transplant community, we respect the privacy of the donors and the donor families. So for example, the potential recipient may not be given the exact age of the donor, but maybe a range saying like this donor is in their age range between 30 and 40. So certainly no information that would breach any privacy for the donor's family or the donor themselves. But absolutely, I would encourage potential recipients to ask as many questions as if they'd like at the time that offer is being made.
Yeah, Nicole, actually, what are some of the questions that you asked when you had these offers?
So the first time I received a call, it was at 2:00 in the morning. So honestly, I didn't ask any questions. All I knew is that it was a high KDPI. And because I had no knowledge of transplant, I went in blind. So I know I had to be at the transplant center early in the morning. And then it was at that time I found out I was number 6 in line for the kidney. That was something I also didn't realize that would happen. The second transplant I received, I received it in Iowa, and I'm in Dallas. And they called and they said, "We think we have a kidney for you." I said, "Okay, what's going on with it?" And she said, "Well, let me tell you." When she said that, I said, "Oh boy." She said, "He has been in jail for over 72 hours within the past 12 months. He has exchanged sex for drugs. He has had sex with IV drug users. He's a drug addict." So with that, I asked my daughter about it, what she thought, if we should go for it. And at that point, again, I was trying to beat dialysis, honestly. And because I had such good luck with the first one, as far as longevity, I decided to go ahead and jump on it and take it. I also understood, and I think what people need to understand, is that when you're offered the kidney, it goes through so much. And so the transplant doctor, transplant surgeon, even, you know, the OPO in the area, it's not going to just send out some bad kidney that they think will kill you. So I took confidence in that everyone thought it was a good kidney for me.
I'm curious, how many offers for a kidney over the years did you receive, and were there any that you turned down?
No. And I guess I find it strange. I didn't understand that people were getting all these offers. Each time I received a call, I got the kidney. The first time, like I said, I was number 6 in line, and I didn't even know that until it was, you know, they said, okay, you'll probably get it. And I said, oh, I thought I was definitely. And they explained that to me. And the second time, same thing. So I never had any opportunities to turn anything down. It was just every time I was offered, I accepted each time.
Your voice can be the sound of change. The National Kidney Foundation's Voices for Kidney Health community includes patients and care partner advocates working with elected officials to help those facing the challenges of kidney disease and to promote better kidney health nationwide. We advocate for policies that will help prevent and delay kidney disease, ensure quality care for patients with kidney failure, and make certain that everyone who wants a transplant can get one. Join us today at kidney.org/voices. That's kidney.org/voices.
And I'm wondering, when do you think it's appropriate to accept a high KDPI kidney?
So to frame the context of high KDPI kidney, potential recipients who want to hear about these offers have to consent ahead of time. And usually consenting to hear about high KDPI kidneys occurs during your pre-transplant evaluation. And when we talk about high KDPI, we want to define that as kidneys with a KDPI score of greater than 85. So nationally, we know about 4 out of every 10 patients on the kidney transplant waiting list have consented to receive these offers. In my opinion, as a general rule, I would say potential recipients who need to expand their opportunities for kidney transplant should consider accepting high KDPI kidneys. So if I could give an example of this scenario, it may include patients who are older, patients who have a very difficult time tolerating dialysis, maybe patients who are listed at centers with extremely high waitlisting times, or patients who may have a narrow window for a kidney transplant before they become too sick or want to get a kidney transplant before they need to go on to dialysis. So the threshold for accepting high KDPI kidneys, in my opinion, may vary depending on personal factors. People who may want to use a high KDPI kidney as a better than dialysis.
Yeah, I think that's really important for all patients to consider. And, you know, with the knowledge that even, you know, high KDPI kidney isn't, quote, a bad kidney, you know, quote, bad kidneys are offered. So that, you know, makes a lot of sense. And I'm also curious. So while not the same as high KDPI kidneys, hepatitis C positive kidneys are another option that can help increase someone's potential to receive a kidney sooner. So why might someone who doesn't have hepatitis C want to consider maybe a hepatitis C positive kidney?
Right. So another good avenue for patients to consider who want to reduce their wait times and expand their opportunities for kidney transplant. Like KDPI kidneys, patients who want to hear about hepatitis C donor positive kidneys have to consent ahead of time to hear about those offers. And since about 2017, we've been, as a transplant community, using hepatitis C positive kidney donors into negative recipients. Yeah. We have safe and effective oral medications to actually treat the hepatitis C in the recipients. And hepatitis C transplant has really expanded our ability to improve rates of transplantation. I haven't looked at this data in a while, but the creatinines that are the lowest creatinines in the recipients of hepatitis C positive donors are typically in the 1 range, which is a really good creatinine. So oftentimes these are very good donors and provide a really good transplant outcome for patients.
Advances like this are so incredibly exciting. The fact that, you know, we could offer a hepatitis C positive kidney and then you'll be able to treat it and still have these great outcomes. So that's really exciting to hear. Now, as we're kind of winding down, I am wondering what questions should someone ask their transplant team to better understand KDPI and how it relates to their personal health status and goals? And I'm wondering, Nicole, having gone through this, are there any questions that you would recommend patients ask?
Again, I didn't ask any questions because they pretty much provided the information to me. However, if they aren't providing the information to you, I would suggest asking what makes it a high KDPI. And as much information as you can about that particular donor without them having HIPAA issues.
So I would encourage patients to take every opportunity when they interact with their transplant center to be a teachable moment. So even if you've already consented for a high KDPI kidney, maybe when you're there for your annual waitlist evaluation, go over your new health problems or your different health problems or what's going on in your life at that time. And kind of try to have a shared decision with the transplant center staff or doctors about what would be best for you given all the other circumstances in your life at that time, whether they be medical, quality of life, personal, social, and see, you know, is a KDPI kidney still right for you? And what maybe ask them to even, you know, review your case and provide some examples of questions you can ask at the time that an offer comes in. I also sometimes encourage my patients to kind of in their head go through what they're going to do when they get the phone call for the kidney transplant. Because as Nicole mentioned, it's a very emotional time. I think patients feel sometimes extra pressure to make the right decision in an instant. And, you know, that can be very challenging. So I encourage my patients to think about what happens when you get that call. What are you going to say? Who are you going to engage? What's important to you at that time? So I think that's a good practice to take.
Yeah, that's an amazing tip. And, you know, while we're here, what questions would you ask, you know, the person who calls you up and says, oh, we have a higher KDPI kidney, you know, are you interested in it?
Yeah. So I think when you're on the phone with the coordinators from the transplant center making those offers to you, realize that this is a job that they do day in and day out. They see a lot of kidney offers come into their center. They evaluate offers for you and other patients. And maybe if you feel comfortable, even ask them their personal opinion of the offer based on, you know, what they're seeing locally at their center happening recently. I think you can ask them to give you the exact, you know, KDPI number. I think you should ask them to remind you about what that means for the longevity of the kidney and really be clear in your own head what that number means for you. So, for example, you know, a high KDPI, when we score it on 0 to 100, some people may think, oh, a high KDPI means a better kidney, in which case, you know, I don't want, well, I would hate for a patient to have some confusion at the time that the offer is being made. So I would say be specific, ask for specific information as far as like what that number means for you, how long they expect the kidney to last, and go from there.
Awesome. Nicole, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I don't have anything to add to that. The same questions that Ann said, mainly what makes it a high KDPI and what the longevity they estimate for that particular kidney.
Perfect. And Ann, where could patients go to get, you know, additional information and resources about this topic?
So I would encourage patients to check out information from the National Kidney Foundation. I think there's a lot of good patient-facing resources that are practical that the NKF offers. Secondly, patients can look to United Network of Organ Sharing, or UNOS, which is an organization that provides information about transplant in general. The other place that patients can go are their local transplant centers. Oftentimes, their transplant center provides patient-facing information that's really helpful in the local context.
Amazing. Do either of you have anything else that you'd like to talk about today in regards to high KDPI kidneys or just KDPI in general?
Yeah, I do want to remind people to do what's best for them. Don't wait on the quote unquote perfect kidney, because I've seen people who had the perfect kidney and it failed within days. However, you have me with this kidney that's lasting and going and has made me feel so much better. So I say, make sure that you pick what's best for you. Consider the factors. I actually had a well-known nephrologist tell me that she doesn't think she would have taken that kidney that I took. So, you know, you have to weigh the pros and cons for yourself. And while I said, okay, I'll take this kidney, I wouldn't take a hepatitis C kidney. So I'm saying that to, which are perfectly fine, but I'm saying that to say it's up to you individually to decide what's best for you and what you want for your experience.
Yeah, that is some wonderful advice.
I would add to what Nicole said that also patients should feel as though they have the confidence that the transplant community and the transplant providers will support them in whatever decision they make and offer the best care that we can for patients post-transplant.
Wonderful. I also wanted to mention, back when we had our little break, that one of the factors involved in determining the KDPI is race or ethnicity. And right now, the National Kidney Foundation is working on trying to remove that, similar to the race coefficient for the EGFR. So I just also wanted to point that out. And we can put some more resources in the show notes for anyone who's interested in helping, you know, kind of push that initiative along. But I also want to just thank you both so much for being here and sharing your expertise, your time, and your information.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. Do you have any questions? Email us directly with your comments and suggestions at nkfpodcasts@kidney.org. We hope you will join us next time. And from all of us at NKF, we wish you good health.